From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Welcome to this week's episode of Naps Chat. I'm Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. For many years, NAPS and others have expressed the need for the United States Postal Service to develop innovative products and services to meet the needs of small businesses as well as the American public. Small businesses represent a growing sector of the U.S. economy, especially among young entrepreneurs. This week's guest on NAPS Chat, Julia Koenig, will discuss one such innovation that may very well revolutionize the way many Americans get their fresh food. Julia Koenig is the director of Innovation Startups Market Institute of the World Wildlife Fund. Permit me to ensure our listeners, believe me, the World Wildlife Fund, whose logo is a giant panda, is not collaborating with the United States Postal Service to establish Pigeon Post by resurrecting the long-extinct passenger pigeon to transport correspondence, or presumptively advocating on behalf of mistreated horses that may be recruited for a new Pony Express service. Rather, we are going to talk about a recent white paper authored by Julia entitled Farmer's Post, Getting Food from Farms to Families. Prior to joining the World Wildlife Fund, Julia spent 4 years at Hart Research Associates and as Director of Research and Policy for the National Women's Business Council. Julia has also been an adjunct professor within Rutgers University Business School's Social Entrepreneurship Program. Julia holds an MBA from the Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania and a Master in Public Administration from Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. Welcome to Naps Chat, Julia.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here today.
Now, Julia, could you tell us what the Innovation Startup Market Institute is and why it is important to the World Wildlife Fund?
Absolutely. And I appreciated your introduction there with the reference to the animals that have worked for the post office in the past. Made me smile. I get that question a lot. People don't expect the World Wildlife Fund to be involved in things like shipping produce across the country. WWF itself is obviously about protecting animals, the environment, and nature. But it's quickly became apparent at WWF shortly after founding that you really can't protect animals and the environment without considering working lands and working people and what that looks like. So it began to expand into exploring how people and nature can thrive best together. And as we look at some of the larger environmental footprints of different industries and of different working lands, food and agriculture quickly comes out to the top of that. It's such an incredibly important industry for so many reasons, but it is one with a very large environmental footprint. And so we do address that in a variety of ways. My specific team, the Markets Institute, is really about the innovation edge of that. So looking at new strategies, new ways of tackling solutions that can happen faster and at scale. And so we really are looking at using market forces to do that, which is the reason for the Markets Institute name. And my particular job on that is at an entrepreneurial end of looking for new business models and new business strategies that really align environmental and social goals with financial goals so that they can quickly happen, bring benefits, and scale across the world.
As you referenced and I referenced, the World Wildlife Fund is known for its advocacy on behalf of animals and, as you said, protecting the environment. Why is the WWF interested in postal issues?
What we see here is a chance to work with the post office and use the post office to address some of that environmental footprint of agriculture, particularly when it comes to food loss and food waste. So I'm sure everyone's familiar with the term food waste, and then food loss refers to food grown on farms that's never even harvested or never even makes it, you know, to a grocery store shelf or wherever someone gets their food. And that's for a variety of reasons. It might be because it doesn't meet certain specifications that are needed for a grocery store to buy it. It might be because a farmer started growing it and demand of, you know, major businesses changed in what they wanted to purchase. It could be for reasons that COVID demonstrated of broken supply chains and simply not being able to get food from point A to point B. And so we see this kind of program as a way to help more people get access to fresh food while addressing some of that environmental footprint of food loss and food waste.
You mentioned the breakdown of the supply chain, the transport of food from the farm to the distributor and then to the supermarkets. Now, the Postal Service, which has probably one of the largest vehicular fleets in the nation, the supply chain for transporting mail really hasn't been that much impacted by the supply chain. Is that why you're seeking the Postal Service as a partner or collaborator with regard to Farmers Post?
That's certainly a big piece of it, is the absolute expertise and dependability of distribution and logistics. But I think beyond that, most food today doesn't go directly from farm to consumer. So most does go through a more complicated supply chain with many sort of levels to get to businesses. Only a small fraction of farms in the U.S. sell directly to people. And when that does happen, it tends to be at places that require pickup, often at very set hours, such as farmers markets or, if you're familiar with them, CSAs or community supported agriculture, which is when somebody buys basically a farm share and then picks it up weekly throughout the farm season. And so there's a disconnect. There's not a lot of great ways to get food from farm to people. But we think the post office is a perfect connector there because it already does go to nearly every person's door nearly every day and has that incredible sort of distribution reach and an ability for immediate scale because it's something existing. And so that might help address that hurdle that exists across all of farming of how to get food from farm to person as opposed to having to go through the existing supply chain.
How long has the fund been interested in connecting farmers directly with the consumers through the U.S. mail?
Yeah, it's a great question. I would say the original idea came up in spring 2020 when we, like absolutely everybody else in the world, was watching supply chain breakdowns and these problems, overlapping problems of people staying at home and cooking more, but bare grocery store shelves. We were watching increasing numbers of people go hungry, yet farmers being forced to dump food, plow it under into fields, pour it out, or not even have labor to pick it in the first place. And so these sort of massive disconnects. So that started the idea. We didn't immediately, it took a little bit of time to figure out what can we do with this idea? Who can we start talking to? What can that look like? But it then ultimately led into some more concrete work we started doing about a year ago, culminating in a study we just released a few weeks ago, and we hope to absolutely continue.
The entrepreneurship, small entrepreneurs in family farms or small farms, they have a very limited market currently because they have to rely on people, as you say, picking up the produce at a farmer's market or some other marketplace within the community. So what is the market right now for these small farms and family farms?
Sure. Another great question. And I think a very important point that's not, always immediately clear to everyone involved. So farmers today, if you're looking at, produce farmers, they only keep on average 7 to 8 cents of every dollar that you or I would spend at a grocery store. And that is due to these sort of long and complicated supply chains. So they're only, it's very hard to make any kind of profit, to make ends meet, and to really survive in that way. And so there are, some farms that try to counteract that by selling just to consumers, but that's only a very small fraction of all farmers. On average, probably around 8% of farms in the U.S., produce farms in the U.S. that sell directly to consumers. But that tends to be in very more metropolitan counties. They tend to be in higher income areas because it's a lot of work for the farmer, a huge time commitment to be constantly traveling to different farmers markets, to trying to do this outreach and build a customer base. It often requires, what's called vertical integration. So farmers having to do their own marketing, often develop their own websites, do their own outreach. And that's a lot for a farmer who is already stretched thin and struggling to turn any kind of profit. And so if we can help provide some of that market, especially since there is consumer demand for local food, we're hoping this can be a huge help to all farmers, but especially small farmers, especially minority farmers too, who are often not in areas where there even are a lot of farmers markets or other options.
I'd like to pick up on something that you mentioned in your study, and clearly opening up markets to small farmers, to minority farmers and so forth is a significant advantage in broadening the market. But I also noticed that the report mentioned projected substantial revenue generation from farmers post for the Postal Service. Could you talk about that?
Sure. So one of my colleagues, her job is to write business cases and to understand what those look like. So she actually put together a business case of what this could mean for the U.S. Postal Service. And so has sort of a detailed analysis there, but, you know, came up with it. A Farmers Post program could probably offer, you know, $1.5 billion in revenues for the post office with just a 2-3% market penetration, which can obviously quickly grow, you know, perhaps, for instance, $6 billion with a 10% market penetration. And that is because of the scalability here. So each package that would get shipped is shipped at a relatively low rate. We're looking at programs where that are, you know, existing programs with the post office, but that are boxes that can be shipped for under $10, some of them a fair amount under $10, depending on the program. But because of the huge consumer demand for such a program and the fact that the USPS already serves the whole country, it could quickly scale and add up to a significant amount of revenue. And people are very used to ordering food online at this point and very eager to do that. And so if you can combine that with the desire to buy locally and support local farmers, I think it would be a huge market.
Let me underscore that. You said $1.5 billion with a 2% penetration up to over $6 billion at 10%. That is a substantial amount of revenue for the Postal Service.
That's what we think. And we want it to be a win for the post office. I mean, we want this to be something that can be long lasting and in every county across the country. And so it is important that it works for all partners involved.
In addition to the advantage to the Postal Service for the revenue generation, what advantage is there to the consumer?
Sure. And I have to say, I have a self-interest here because I want to buy food through the post office and get fresh local produce as a consumer. So I think there's multiple layers of advantages. For someone who can afford to buy food, it is a convenient option to get healthy produce delivered to their door from area farms. And so even if you live in an area with farmers markets, with, you know, where you can buy a CSA, it's not always convenient or possible to go pick it up. And this is a way to support those farms and get fresh fruits and vegetables. But I think it becomes an even bigger advantage to people who live in areas that don't have access to that. So what is so unique about the post office is that it does serve absolutely everyone. And so it's this great equalizing force. And we mapped the vegetable and fruit farms across the country. And it turns out there are vegetable and fruit farms in nearly every county across the U.S. Until you really get into northern Alaska, pretty much everywhere else there are fruit and vegetable farms. And so although this program is talking about local shipping, so farms, you know, shipping to consumers who live near them, it's still a program that can exist pretty much everywhere. And if you map areas where people don't have access to food, what are the USDA classifies as low-income areas with low access to food, or more colloquially known as a food desert, those overlap a lot of the counties where there are farms. So there's this huge disconnect that food is growing yet people can't access it. And I think that Farmers Post could help with that and ensure that food is getting to people that need it the most. And that can mean not just, you know, a chance for tasty food and healthy food, but then health impacts from it. So I was really excited when I spoke to a lot of physicians, to a lot of public health groups, to learn that even if you don't change the rest of your diet, eating more fruits and vegetables can quickly have an impact. For instance, eating just one more serving of fruit or vegetables a day, even holding the rest of your diet and exercise constant, is a reduction, a 5% reduction in all-cause mortality. And that's additive if you have more servings beyond that.
I have to chuckle about something. You said that there's a local farm in virtually every community except some parts of Alaska. I would just note, and I want to follow up on this, Alaska is sort of unique because there's what's called bypass mail. So they get their fresh food, if you will, by the Postal Service already through what's called bypass mail in Alaska. So they can get Hawaiian pineapples or Florida oranges, Florida or California oranges or bananas from Puerto Rico, let's say, directly to their home already through the Postal Service.
Yes, I want to go check out the dog sleds at some point as, you know, research for this project, of course.
Absolutely. Maybe food gets delivered by dog sled after it gets dropped off from the planes through bypass mail. Who knows? One of the things that the new Postmaster General, actually he's not so new anymore, but Postmaster General Louis DeJoy, is that he's transitioning the Postal Service from correspondence-centric business model to parcel-centric, small parcels and parcels. How does this dovetail with your aspirations for Farmers Post?
I think it makes it even easier in many ways for something like Farmers Post. You know, obviously, that is exactly what we're talking about here is the, you know, our boxes and not, you know, reasonably sized boxes. So sort of in a 15 to 20 pound range. So nothing too massive. And so I think, you know, if there's other programs and other sort of ways to get that kind of box from a farm to a consumer, that's a win for everyone.
One of the attributes of farm fresh food is that it be fresh. So I have to ask you this question. What would be your expectation to be for speed of delivery, that is, from the field to the home?
That is an excellent question and connects into what can be shipped. Since obviously USPS is not, there's no cold chain here. So it's not, you know, refrigerated vehicles. And so we have to talk the length of time and season and location and everything ties into what can be shipped. So we're looking at things that can ship with either sort of up to 48 hours. So certainly looking at some programs such as the new Local Connect program rolling out that does same day, talking about and exploring some of the drop-offs at distribution centers that would do next day. And then also looking at some that could be that sort of 48-hour and two-day delivery. But I think if we, you know, concentrate on same day and next day, it allows even greater variety of produce to be shipped. But some of that also might depend on when it's being shipped. If you're in July and August, perhaps 48 hours is a little too long for a lot of fresh produce to sit without temperature control. But if you're in, you know, the spring and the fall, then I think that becomes a lot more doable.
In the paper, and this is a follow-up to that question, in the paper you do acknowledge a number of open issues that need to be addressed if Farmers Post could take flight, including, as you said, packaging and price. Could you talk about those issues that need to be addressed?
Absolutely. Yes, we think this is a huge opportunity, but there's absolutely hurdles and questions to explore. We're hopeful that these are all tackleable ones and solvable ones, but might require some creativity. So tied to that sort of, and cold chain usually comes up the most, but tied to that, obviously, you know, you outlined it in Alaska, which I don't think has to worry too much most of the year about keeping things cold. But obviously there's, you know, various food and produce that has been shipped through different delivery services for a very long time. So it's not that that is brand new, but, you know, we would like to avoid having to, for instance, fill a box with styrofoam and freezer packs, all of which gets discarded and brings a really large environmental footprint and also a really large cost for individual farmers. So trying to figure out how can we, you know, best package, best insulate, best ship things in a way that minimizes waste and minimizes cost. And so exploring different solutions there and different options, and they'll have to, you know, just be some tests on, you know, how things make it from point A to point B under different scenarios. And connected to that also, could you even return it? You know, are some project or some of those products reusable? So, you know, can a farm include a return label that a consumer can you know, ship back liners or things like that back through the post office to be able to reuse them. So I think that's definitely one of the questions we want to tackle. And then on price side, I think it's, you know, getting back to some of those benefits to the consumers. I think there's plenty of room when you talk about farmers only keeping 7 to 8 cents on a dollar for a farmer to keep a lot more of that revenue and to see a sort of livable price for their food, and for consumers who can't afford food to get a reasonably priced box. But if we're also talking about trying to get food to people who are lower income and cannot easily access food, we need to make sure it is affordable for them as well. And so we want to explore, could things like SNAP and WIC benefits be extended to such a program? And there's a lot of states and counties that offer what are called double food bucks, where if you use your SNAP or WIC benefits to purchase food at a farmer's market, it goes twice as far. So can things like that be extended to Farmers Post as well, so that we can ensure that more people are able to afford it? Or to get even more creative, there's things called produce prescription programs being piloted across the country, where a doctor can actually prescribe food as medicine to somebody. And so with the theory that insurance companies might be interested in covering that if it brings a health impact. And so even exploring if things like that can be integrated into such a program in the future.
I would just remind everyone that this is not as radical. Farmers Post is not as radical as some would some would think, because after all, the Postal Service has shipped baby chicks through the mail. You know, people ship baby chicks through the mail. And I think that's a little bit more difficult than some food staples.
I was just going to say, it's funny you bring that up. My boss, Jason Clay, grew up on a farm, and he was so excited when we started discussing this, because he has very vivid memories of collecting boxes of baby chicks from, like, the delivery from, you know, from the postal truck that would come to his farm and getting them out.
Let me ask, Julia, have you spoken to the Postal Service directly, and what has the agency's response been to this proposal of Farmers Post?
Sure. I've had quite a few conversations with them. So I've had a lot of support, talked to a lot of different teams to figure out what are the best ways to tackle this. So I think there's a lot of enthusiasm for it, a lot of support for it, a lot of interest in figuring it out. Obviously, there are some of those, you know, hurdles that we already discussed. So we're trying to figure out the best way forward. But there's been a lot of excitement about, you know, what this could mean and what this could be.
Now, although I don't believe this needs any type of legislation to authorize Farmers Post, because there's no prohibition against the mailability of food products to the extent that they are legal, the material that's being shipped. Have you reached out to members of Congress on this issue?
We have. You're absolutely right. It's not that we're asking for sort of permission in that way. But we've done some early outreach to Congress around some of that affordability question. So beginning to ask questions around, you know, potential extension of nutrition benefits and what that could, you know, look like, and how to best support all consumers through this program. So very early stage discussions, but also some really great positive feedback so far.
So final question, what's next in your crusade for Farmers Post?
So I am very excited. I think we're going to have two pilots that launch soon. These are very small scale pilots. So the purpose here is to test the logistics. So we're not at the point yet that we can test scale or targeted consumer groups or targeted farmer groups, but really trying to understand some of those logistics of, you know, packing boxes, what lasts, how long, do things all can, you know, is it accessible to farmers to go through these programs? So we have two farming groups that are working with us. One is called 4P Foods in Virginia, and they are a food hub. And then another one called Healthy Plan Eat up in Connecticut, and they're sort of a virtual platform and aggregator. And so each of these groups is going to hopefully be kicking off a pilot in the next few weeks that will extend through the summer and fall to test some of those logistics. And I think that will yield some really terrific results. And then we hope to engage in some sort of deeper market research and targeted consumer and farmer outreach as well.
Well, I want to wish you and the World Wildlife Fund, as well as America's small farmers, the best of luck in this project. And we hope that our folks could be engaged with, continue to be engaged with you and the WWF in this enterprise. And I want to thank you for joining me today, Julia.
Oh, thank you so much for having me and for all of your support. And I hope we get, so if anyone listening is eager to get involved and help, please don't hesitate to reach out.
Well, how would they reach you?
Julia.Kernick@WWFUS.org.
That's Julia.
That's on the website too.
Julia spelled J-U-L-I-A dot Kernick, K-U-R-N-I-K at WWF.org. Is that correct?
WWFUS.org.
Well, thank you so much, Julia. Julia, again, Julia is the Director for Innovation Startup Markets Institute for the World Wildlife Fund. And once again, thank you for joining us, Julia.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And I want to thank NapsChat listeners for logging on this week. If you enjoy NapsChat, please leave a positive review in the Apple Podcast Store. And more importantly, share NapsChat with your friends and colleagues. In the meantime, stay safe and stay healthy.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you. I'm gonna